1390 AM Radio Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Danny O'Brien. Prime Minister Mark Carney is on a tour of Asia with stops at the Association of Southeast Asian Nations Summit in Kuala Lumpur and the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in South Korea. A major focus of the trip is increasing trade with Asian countries after Trump called off trade negotiations between the U.S. and Canada last week. Trump suspended the talks over an ad produced by the government of Ontario that featured former U.S. President Ronald Reagan speaking against tariffs. In Kuala Lumpur, Carney said that the U.S. and Canada were close to a deal before the talks were called off, but did not comment on whether he had seen the ad before it aired. Multi-billion dollar company Amazon is set to lay off up to 30,000 corporate employees as early as sometime this week. The layoffs are expected to impact a variety of divisions within the company, such as human resources, devices and services, and operations. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy stated that this decision is based on what he described as an excessive bureaucracy within the company. He also stated back in June that the increased use of artificial intelligence would inevitably lead to dismissals. This will be the largest employee reduction in the company since late 2022, when 27,000 employees were removed. Iconic TV mom June Lockhart died in her home in Santa Monica, California last week of natural causes. Born in New York City in 1925, her film career started at a young age, starring in the 1938 version of A Christmas Carol, and then in other films such as Sergeant York and The Yearling. For more information, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to a very historic episode. Getting here today was sort of an impossible mission of itself, and let me tell you why. But today is the Tom Cruise special that was supposed to, you know, I was really expecting to be on top of things when I got here. So I had to sprint, sort of like Tom Cruise in a way. This is all planned. This was all how it was supposed to go. Anyways. Coughlin's Law. Never act surprised. Never lose your cool. Good morning and welcome to a very historic episode of Weirdo Rivers, where we're joined by Concordia alumni, Chemical Benjamin. Well, you see, Benjamin and I have been studying the beautiful mind of Mr. Tom Cruise over the last, two, 3 months? And today, we will be talking about the legacy of who can really only be described as the Prometheus of our time. One of the greatest minds to ever grace the big screen. Saved the world numerous times. I mean, I don't have enough fingers to count how many times we've already seen this guy save the world. I'm not just talking about Mission Impossible, okay? If he wasn't there in Cocktail, for example,
Well, that one girl would still be with her rich, overbearing parents instead of being swayed away by, taken away by Tom Cruise.
Okay, so what are we going to go over?
Well, we watched Cocktail last night.
We did. Well, okay, so our setup for the Tom Cruise thing has been double features, where it started with the Mission Impossible series. We watched Mission Impossible 1 after, like, a shift.
That's true.
What, like, yeah, in August, and said, how about we watch Mission Impossible 2? And since then, it's been a two-movie a night, weekly. Weekly double features. Last night was Rain Man and Cocktail, or other way around. Cocktail.
Cocktail is a bad movie. It's not, like, even... It's not necessarily one of those movies that, like, you watch and you enjoy it because it's so bad. Like, it did feel like a genuinely punishing experience to sit through. In terms of one that's so bad it's good, Mission Impossible 2, a lot of people hate that film. I'm a firm defender of it because it's, like, a Bollywood film that Tom Cruise stars in, essentially.
Well, but the Mission Impossible, I mean, what, they're all... it's still a spy movie. They're all spy movies. But you get to the second one, and I mean, yeah, the first one. Well, what? I remember we were halfway through the first Mission Impossible. We were like, I don't think I'm following the plot.
Well, but there's always a scene where they explain.
They remind you what's happening.
And I do appreciate that a lot because I'm a pretty stupid person.
I don't think the second Mission Impossible ever gave you that.
No, well, I don't really remember. Oh, I do remember what it's about, the Chimera.
It's the Chimera one. It's the one that starts, it's cold open, is like an evil scientist going,
every hero needs a villain. This is why I made Chimera.
Chimera, the plot of it, for the listeners who are uninitiated, is there is like an evil scientist who is... he creates a disease called Chimera. I don't know why it's called Chimera.
It's like, he was like inventing a cure to every disease, and then Chimera is like, a step of the way of inventing the miracle cure is creating the most evil disease possible.
Yeah, and then, well, no, he creates the cure, and then he sells it to a pharma company, and he's like, I'm going to unleash Chimera, and then you're going to be rich.
Oh, yeah, true. It was because a big pharma.
It was a critique of big pharma.
Was Mission Impossible 2. And then the third one...
It was a critique of big pharma for people whose, like, take on big pharma comes from that one scene in Family Guy.
Which one?
Where Lois's dad explains to Brian that, like, it's more profitable to treat cancer than to cure it.
Is this from Family Guy?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. A lot of people take that scene as, like,
I feel like a lot of people get their opinions on Tom Cruise from Family Guy as well.
Is he in it?
Well, they make him short. I haven't seen much Family Guy. One of the worst things about me is I have not seen much of Family Guy. Actually a big point of contention with a lot of...
I've seen very little.
Friends. Wow. I guess neither. I know they make him really short, and then people, like, I don't know. He was fine. Okay.
Tom Cruise is not that short.
He's like, what, 5'7"?
I want to emphasize this. It's like when people say Napoleon is short. It's like, well, that was pretty tall at the time.
It was like he was... The fact that I would, like, tower over him is funny because he's Tom Cruise, but... Is he 5'7"?
He's something like that.
Yeah. Except in All the Right Moves.
He announces that he's 5'10". he says to the table, It's a scene where he's talking about being a football player, and he announces, he's like, how come they need a guy talented 5'10" like me?
No, you see, it's self-deprecating.
Yeah.
He's saying, why would the NFL ever want a white 5'10 guy from Pennsylvania in All the Right Moves? Which is, I mean, how, so many, okay. We have watched, 21 Tom Cruise films?
Something like that, yeah.
How many of them have been, he's really good at something, and he is kind of mean to a girl in his life?
He's not a gentle lover. He's
in any of them, really.
He's a guy who's pretty bad to women, except for in the Mission Impossible series. The thing about the Mission Impossible series is that Tom Cruise plays, like, if he was a female character, we'd call him a Mary Sue, and where he is essentially, like, a flawless man who can do anything.
Well, he can speak every language.
He can speak every language. He can do basically anything. He knows everything. And he gets married, which is a really in episode in Mission Impossible 3.
So this is the third one. We're scattered now, but the third Mission Impossible is the only, like, Tom Cruise. He always has that kind of like, oh, I'm on top of things look in his eye. I believe that's what they mean when they say he's got that intensity. Mm-hmm. Also, like the vacant intensity that people describe him as. Except in Mission Impossible 3, where the whole time he's like, oh my god, they're gonna kill my wife. Where, like, the other Mission Impossibles are, like, about saving the world. The third one is very much about his wife getting kidnapped and him being terrified of it the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is why at the end of Mission Impossible 3, he takes a vow of celibacy.
Precisely. It's similar to a monk, which is also something that Tom Cruise wanted to become.
Is this true?
This is true. I was reading up, and there was a Playboy magazine interview with one of his ex-wives, and one of them, if I'm not mistaken, she claimed that they broke up because he wanted to go and become a monk, which he disputes, and she also said that Playboy.
What years is this? Pre Scientology?
This is after. This is well after Scientology.
So did he want... Oh, because, yeah, you can be whatever religion in Scientology, right?
Correct. You can... Scientology, the idea is that you can be, like, a Jewish Scientologist, a Christian Scientologist, or Muslim Scientologist,
as whatever. Long as you do Scientology stuff as well.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, require you to, like, forego every other religion, which I find is smart. That's how, you know, the Romans integrated their religion all over the world. Because you could be, you know, whatever, and then also you could integrate the Roman gods into it.
And that's, yeah.
That's similar to what Tom Cruise...
But he denies having wanted to be a monk.
Well, he denies that was the reason for the breakup. I don't know how he feels about the monk question. he did go to seminary school, which I learned that very recently.
What? Why?
To become a priest.
Oh.
He was originally going to become a priest.
There's funny photos of him in priest getup when he infiltrates the Vatican in Mission Impossible 3.
Also true.
That's when he infiltrates the Vatican so he can become Philip Seymour Hoffman. Something many of us have attempted.
He does. The way that the voice system in Mission Impossible works is really cool. The mask and the voice.
Yeah.
They force Philip Seymour Hoffman to, like, read something out. So that Tom Cruise's machinery can perfectly mimic his voice.
They do the, oh no, the mask thing broke twice.
Yes.
In the series. But and it's pretty good both times.
I didn't like the voice thing because I thought that it was Tom Cruise. Because they didn't reveal it until episode 3. Movie 3. I really thought that Tom Cruise was just under there doing a perfect impression.
Yeah.
Of any
that's
guy.
True. Yeah, no, I mean, the first mask... I mean, actually, I think most Mission Impossible really caught me off guard with the mask thing. They got me.
They always reveal the mask.
And I think the best one is probably in...
Somebody stop me.
In yeah, well, so I also watched The Mask recently. Really similar to Mission Impossible.
Is it?
Yeah.
In what respects?
It's about...
it's about
So let's take you back to the very beginning of the career of Mr. Tom Cruise. After he moves, where was he born? I don't even know where he was born.
New York, I thought. Somewhere, yeah, Syracuse.
Syracuse. And then I know the most important fact of his childhood is that because of his weird family situation, he moved around a lot, and he did at one point live in Ottawa.
His dad worked for the Canadian military.
It's funny. I think like a lot of when people describe Tom Cruise again as like that vacant, intense stare, it's strange, but I think they just don't recognize
child abuse.
Whoa. Yeah. I was going to say classic Ottawa sadness.
Oh.
Like that sort of look on your face that you get when you realize that like the capital of Canada is not a good place.
It's what happens when you step foot into the Glebe.
He has to have been to the Glebe.
And you have that like waxed over look and you're like, God, I'm in the Glebe right now.
Okay, so after living in Ottawa, among other places, but most importantly living in Ottawa, he gets a very small role in the film, in the 1981 film Endless Love at the age of 19. Endless Love is, I mean, it did super well. It grossed like way more than its budget was.
It's actually incredible to me. And I know I've spoken to many parents, which is something I do, and all of them were watching Endless Love back in the
day. Theaters too.
In theaters.
Like people saw this movie. The theme for the film is done by Diana Ross and Lionel Richie.
Originally an X-rated film.
Is that true?
I just saw it on Wiki.
Wow. Here's the theme from Endless Love. So Endless Love is a little film about the poster says she's 15, he is 17.
The love every parent fears.
And so what that entails is this main character, who even plays him again? It's a guy who's in nothing.
Zanko,
Martin Hurwit.
Martin Hurwit and Brooke Shields. Brooke Shields was in stuff.
Brooke Shields, yeah.
She was in stuff. She had an actual career.
Leading role in Pretty Baby.
A child model starting at the age of 11 months, so that's perverse.
Whoa.
Ay, ay, ay.
Oh my God. Okay, well, so she's 15, he's 17, and they're so in love that the family is like, or not the mother seems totally fine with that. In fact, the mother walks in on them making love and just watches from the stairwell.
She does.
Is a scene in Endless Love. And then the father's like, this is all going too far. My daughter, Brooke Shields, has to study, and this main character, who's not Tom Cruise, by the way, we should have mentioned that Tom Cruise is a very small role in this one,
yes,
but a very pivotal one.
Pivotal role in Endless Love, the love every parent fears.
In which the main Martin Hurwit is mad about how his girlfriend's dad is saying they can't see each other for what, like a week?
A month,
okay.
So she can finish finals without, instead of like making love to her boyfriend all the time.
All the time. But they're very progressive. The mom is very progressive. The mom is too progressive about it. And then we cut to Tom Cruise in cutoffs taking his shirt off in a field.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, hey man, if a girl told me I couldn't see her for a month, I'd burn her house down. and then they're like, haha,
stack of wet newspapers.
They're like, haha, Tom Cruise, be serious. And he goes, no, I'm serious, man. Like, I tried it once. Like, you ever light a stack of wet newspapers on fire? You know, it smokes like crazy. And then when you put it out, everyone thinks you're a hero. So Martin Hewitt just goes, I got it. I'm gonna go, and immediately tries this stunt on his girlfriend's house, lighting a stack of wet newspapers on fire.
I think it's ambiguous whether or not he intended to burn her house down, because he did see her with another guy at a party that was happening at the house, and that incited a fire in him.
And that it's it's true. And then the rest of the film is more or less this Martin Hewitt guy just ruining his girlfriend's life.
Yes.
His high school girl, mind you, he's 17, she's 15. the love that every parent fears.
It explores the themes of obsessive love.
Is old. Yeah. And what, yeah, when we were researching it, it seemed like the book is very much like, this is a book about an insane stalker guy. But the theme for the movie is, like, I mean, it sounds like a corny 80s love movie. And I think this Franco Zeffirelli guy who directed it may have believed it to be so. I think they're very sympathetic to this guy.
They are. He gets what he wants in the end.
He does.
Yeah.
He literally picks her up in her bed after killing her dad, which we don't have time to get into. But he picks her up and he shakes her and he says, "I know you still love me." And she goes,
"Yeah, I do."
You're right.
He pins her to the bed. I was like, "Oh,
yeah."
This is about to be a really bad scene to watch. I would like to emphasize that apparently the Wikipedia page is AI slop. It says this article may incorporate text from a large language model.
Oh, that sucks. Is Wikipedia doing that now?
Well, I mean, anyone can edit it, so you theoretically could go and put AI slop into it.
That's horrible.
Especially if you're working on, for some reason you're editing the Wikipedia page of Endless Love.
Well, the Wikipedia page for Tom Cruise filmography was edited like yesterday.
Oh, this broke my heart.
This hurt. Okay, so we're doing these chronologically, but somebody has added. Last night we watched Cocktail and Rain Man, but somebody on the Tom Cruise filmography Wikipedia page added Young Guns in between Cocktail and Rain Man,
where
he has a cameo
as Murphy's henchman.
Murphy's henchman.
I don't know who Murphy is yet. Maybe I'll find
out. Like, the debate, do we even watch Young Guns, was a fiery one. But ultimately, we do want to watch Austin Powers in Goldmember, mm-hmm. in which Tom Cruise also has a cameo.
It's true. I haven't watched the other two. The other two Austin Powers.
So oh, you don't
catch up on that.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to watch all three Austin Powers
before we hit.
Just so we understand Goldmember.
Before we hit Austin.
Goldmember's
Gold
Member's the one with Beyonce, right?
Beyonce is in it,
like a lot too. Like she's important to the film.
I believe so.
Back to the concept of AI slop. Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning.
Yes.
And Joe Biden.
Yes, I want to talk about this. Joe Biden, apparently, when Mission Impossible 7 and 8 came out, he played them in the White House movie theater, which I would love to go to the White House movie theater. But he left it and he said, like, this is real. And he says it informed a bunch of his opinions on AI and his AI regulations.
It made him more frightened of AI, wary.
It made him more wary of AI because if you don't know about Mission Impossible,
seven Dead
eight,
Reckoning Part 1 and the Final Reckoning.
The bad guy is an AI system that is referred to just as the Entity.
The Entity.
Which I think is pretty cool.
It's really cool for the first movie.
The second movie kind of sucks.
Mission Impossible 8 came out this year. It's so bad.
It's all exposition. It's all, like, just shots of, like, better Mission Impossible movies, which I think the cardinal sin in a movie is to reference a better movie.
One of our dear friends joined just for Mission Impossible 8.
Yeah.
And he was, like, obviously left thinking, why have you been watching? Like, it was... Ugh. It's the second half of a two-part movie, and the first 2 hours of it are exposition.
Yes. It's like 3.5 hours
You can't
long
do
or
that.
It's
and
so...
they bring back the guy from Mission Impossible 1 who, in the best heist in the whole series, Tom Cruise is hanging from the ceiling, stealing the knock list, and there's, like, the sweat beads falling from his head. He's got to drop the sweat in his hand to not...
Because one bead may trigger the entire system.
And to make the guy leave the room for the knock list, he feeds them laxatives or something.
He put laxatives in his coffee.
Coffee. And the character they bring back in Mission Impossible 8 is the guy who was... guarding the knock list and they made poop himself.
Who lost his job because of it.
Because the knock, which fair enough. If I was a CIA and, I mean, he stole the knock list. Tom Cruise got it, even though he dropped the knife.
He dropped the knife onto the table.
And they bring back that guy who goes, Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt. Ethan Hunt, you changed my life that day because I lost my job, and I've been, what, like, in northern Canada?
He was working. He was in Alaska, I think, like, because it was across from Russia.
True.
He was working at, like, some, like weather station or something. Like, he was working, like, detecting sonar waves from submarines and stuff. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was hard to keep track of that one.
But he fell in love with an Inuit woman, and...
All right, let's go back to the beginning. After Endless Love, after his very small role in Endless Love, he has, like, more of a main role, but not a main role in Taps.
As Captain David Sean.
In my opinion, the worst one we've seen so far.
Probably the least enjoyable to watch, at least.
And it has something to work with, too. It's a film about... They're a bunch of military school kids who take over the military school because it's going to get torn down for condo. Like, it's about loving your country or whatever.
It's dying for your country. That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
That was a good line from the movie. Some, like, drill sergeant looking at these kids who are literally fighting for what they believe in and saying, to lay down your life for something, that's the stupidest thing you'll ever say in your life.
That's probably true.
This is the first time and only time, question mark, we have seen Tom Cruise die on screen so far.
I was going to say that. Like, so far, Tom Cruise has not died. He has, aside from Taps, no spoilers for Taps, by the way, in case you feel so inclined to watch it for some reason.
Well, we just spoiled it.
Yeah. If you care about watching Taps, then, I don't know, don't.
Yeah, it's not good. Unless you want to be a Tom Cruise completionist as well. Also the first role of Sean Penn is in that one.
Yeah, it's really
as just
funny.
Another military kid. And also Giancarlo Esposito is in it.
As a
young military boy.
Tom Cruise plays like a fanatical... He wears like the Curtis Sliwa beret throughout the whole thing too. He plays like a fanatical, dedicated student of this military academy.
Yeah, he's like the all-star.
Which I think
kiddo.
Is really funny to be imagine people that dedicated to their military boarding school.
And then after that, he's in a movie called Losing It, which is the most like forgettable probably so far. It's we'll get to Risky Business, but it's like a proto Risky Business where it's about four kids who hit the road to Tijuana to go get laid.
They do.
And Tom Cruise is like the quiet stud. He barely talks in the movie.
He gets
romantically entangled with a much older woman who's just gotten out of a terrible marriage.
He's the most moral.
Is he? Yeah, I'd say so.
Of the guys in Losing It. He's the most Laurel.
Laurel. What I was remarking about Losing It was that the movie is called Losing It. I'd say the main, like, doofus of the film, of, like, the four boys, is the guy who's obsessed with Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
You got this guy who's, like, a diehard obsessed with Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra's final words on his deathbed.
Yes.
I'm losing it.
It's probably a reference.
Do you think he died way after this movie came out. He died in 1999. Do you think Frank Sinatra saw Losing It? No, he did not. I actually wholeheartedly believe Frank Sinatra has not seen the movie Losing It.
I could see a scenario in which Frank Sinatra sees Losing
It. He probably saw Endless Love.
Unfortunately, yes.
This begs... hold on. Okay. His next role is in The Outsiders, which, you know, beloved book, The Outsiders, Stevie Wonder... Stevie Wonder on the soundtrack for this one. Very important film in my mom showing it to me when I was young and saying, this is an important movie about life.
Yeah, it is.
And what do I come out of? I don't know. I was like two. I was young when I watched the first time. I probably thought that that was probably deep. And I do remember, what's important about this film, though, is it's definitely the first time my mom ever pointed at the screen and said, that's Tom Cruise. He's an important actor.
This is just where it all began.
Remember his face. This is definitely the first Tom Cruise movie I saw was The Outsiders.
Where it all began.
So they stay gold. Tom Cruise is barely in it. He's not...
He does a backflip.
He does a backflip for no reason, other than to, I guess, show off that he can do his own stunts for later.
I want to talk about doing his own stunts.
Let's talk about doing his own stunts.
Now, when I heard that phrase, I took it as a joke. I was like, okay, I get that he doesn't have a stunt double, but what does that, like, mean in practice? Like, when he does his own stunts in Mission Impossible, I would make fun of it. I'm like, this is probably, like, fucking, it's probably green screened or something, but it's actually very impressive.
He climbed the Burj Khalifa.
It's actually extremely impressive. He climbs the Burj Khalifa.
Obviously he didn't free climb it like they imply in the movie, but he was on like one or two strings. Like, he's hurt himself seriously doing his own stunts.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a stunt double, because where could you find a guy?
He did drive a motorcycle off a cliff and parachute off it at like 55.
Correct.
In Mission Impossible 6 or 7? Which one was that?
I don't recall.
That was 7.
A lot of
that
was Mission Impossible's kind of blend together.
7 ended with the train scene that felt very much like a reference to the first Mission Impossible
scene. Awesome train sequence.
7 was good. It sucks how bad 8 was.
I know, it does. Well, the problem is, like, the story of Mission Impossible 7 and 8 does not need to be told over 7 hours. That's my thing. It could have been, and the villain in Mission Impossible, which is not the entity, is not very good. It's this guy who's like tenting his fingers and is like, I can't wait to get control of the entity.
Yeah.
And then the whole world will be mine.
Because, yeah, Mission Impossible, like, the villains were never really the good part, except in the third one. God, Philip Seymour Hoffman was so good as like an Epstein guy.
They had a couple of the Mission Impossibles where they had an overarching villain.
Yeah, 5 and 6 had Lane.
Lane.
Who they literally trap in a big clear box. Was that 5?
Awesome.
That was so good.
They trap him like a roach.
Literally slams his hands again. He's like trying to punch Tom Cruise and he realizes he's punching a glass wall, and then he tries to punch in other directions and realizes he's totally trapped.
He starts trying to shoot through it too, which is funny. Which I'm like, yeah, you're only... That's good.
And he was good. He was like a weird, like, mousy, conniving villain.
He was. He was the head of something called the Syndicate, which the movie spends a lot of time calling Tom Cruise crazy for believing in.
It's true.
As if the Syndicate did not gas him in a... he went to a vinyl record listening box.
To get his mission.
Yeah, to get his mission. And then... he went to Phenopolis, and in the listening station, the door seals on him, and it floods with gas.
Yep.
And then he does that to Lane later on. He's like, hey, how does it feel now?
So we go straight from The Outsiders, where he plays Steve Randall, who does a backflip, and has, like, four lines?
He does.
He's also got, like, weird sharp teeth in this movie.
He does.
I don't know if, like, I guess they're fake.
Well, Tom Cruise's teeth are pretty strange in real life. We will get to this.
The middle two.
The...
Okay. But this is the first banger in his movie catalog.
Yes.
He goes straight from The Outsiders to Risky Business, where they get Tangerine Dream on the soundtrack.
Awesome.
You open the movie, you get Tom Cruise going.
Soundtrack is awesome.
Dream is always the same. And he describes a scenario in which he goes into the neighbor's house and he walks into the shower, into the bathroom, and there's a beautiful woman showering, and she asks him to join him. And then he wakes up in class and he's like failing his test.
Yeah.
And the moral of the story of Risky Business, well, it is to take risks. Unfortunately, the mantra of the movie cannot be repeated. Mm-hmm. It just simply cannot. But sometimes you gotta say, what the heck? Start. I can't do that. I'm sorry. I've done Risky Business a bad service, but... Sometimes the first great film in his catalog.
Sometimes you just gotta say, what the heck, man.
Sometimes you just gotta say, what the heck. The movie would be completely different if he said, sometimes you gotta say, what the fudge. The risks would be a lot smaller.
Sometimes you just gotta say, what the fudge, man. And you can, and say, yeah, I can eat these chocolates after my bedtime. It won't keep me up.
And it's got the Weasel Man from The Sopranos and The Matrix. Ralph Cifaretto, I don't know the actor's name. He's also in Memento. He's like,
hey, so you're the wise guy
who's got the crystal egg.
Oh, yeah, the crystal egg figures in large in risky business.
The crystal egg gets stolen right from his parents' house by the woman from the dream, who really comes in, you think, because of the dream, that she's going to ruin his life the whole time, when in reality, Princeton could use a guy like Tom Cruise.
They do. She changes his entire life.
She changes his whole life. He takes the risks. Listen, he gets the interview with Princeton while he's running a brothel out of his parents' home while they're away. Man from Princeton comes in and says, "Are you Joel Goodson?" And he goes, "Yeah, let's do this interview right now. Let's do it." And he does the interview. And they're like, "Oh, it seems like you got quite the operation going on here." And he goes, "Yes. I've made so-and-so money and whatever." And then they're like, "Okay, it's looking like it's going really poorly." And he does this little joke where he goes, "It's looking like University of Illinois." Because the movie takes place in Chicago.
It is a very Chicago movie, I find.
Yeah, I think Endless Love was in Chicago as well.
It is indeed.
It's what the devil character he plays in Endless Love goes on to do after his risky business.
Well, I like I've said before, I like to believe that every Tom Cruise movie takes place at different points in the same guy's life.
There is a timeline that can be drawn, and maybe we should have before recklessly going on the radio and maybe we should have drawn out a whole map of what this Tom Cruise guy was doing his whole life. Because you could, realistically, any of these movies could become Ethan Hunt so far.
Yes. Well, someone on Letterboxd said that Cocktail is a sequel to Top Gun. Because he gets out of the... Cocktail begins with him getting out of the military.
That's true.
It begins with him getting... And that's the thing you forget in Cocktail, is that he's, like, a veteran.
Yeah, he says, "I just got back from fighting for my country."
Yeah, and you won't even give me a drink on the house?
Yeah.
You don't get rich by giving
you
me a drink.
You don't get rich by giving someone for free.
Which is true.
Yeah. I learned a lot about how to treat people from Cocktail.
Yeah, I think it's going to inform all of my behavior from here on
out. Would you even say it gave you all the right moves? Where he plays Steven Jordovic.
I think all the right
a
moves
Serbian
would be a better...
in Ampipe, Pennsylvania.
I think all the right moves would be a better title for Cocktail. And then also perhaps for Risky Business. Well, that's all the wrong moves.
All the right moves, he doesn't do anything good.
No.
He's okay at football, and then he throws it away because of his ego. And he's got an awesome girlfriend who plays the saxophone.
Who also is Marty McFly's mom.
Yeah, from Back to the Future.
Yeah, Marty McFly's mom who, like, wants him.
Yeah, it was hard to... We were trying to figure out what famous movie she was from the whole time, but it's hard to recognize Marty McFly's mom. Like, it's Marty McFly's mom from the past and Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to recognize her when she's not, like, completely wide-eyed at the sight of Marty McFly the whole time, like
her,
she is in that movie.
Her son, yeah.
She's like a Lisa Simpson figure in All the Right Moves.
She plays a saxophone.
She's like a super genius in a small town who plays a saxophone.
It's true.
And is dating Tom Cruise as Steven Jordjevic, the Serbian football prodigy.
He's kind of like a
Nelson. Who's 5'10 in this movie.
He's kind of like a Nelson figure.
He's kind of like Nelson.
He's a lot like Nelson, I find.
Okay, now we get to one of the most... interesting Tom Cruise films.
Legend.
Directed by Ridley Scott. It's a fantasy movie where Tim Curry plays Darkness. Mm-hmm. The movie opens with the words, "I am Lord Darkness. Are you not my foulest goblin?" And then there's this little goblin guy, not Tom Cruise. He's like a little goblin man. And he's like, "Black as midnight." Or he goes, "What? Is your heart not black?" And he goes,
"Black as midnight.
Black as midnight.
As pitch.
Black as pitch.
Black as the foulest
Blacker
witch.
Blacker than the foulest witch." And they are trying to kill the last unicorn to bring eternal winter, which Darkness says many times, as long as one unicorn lives, the sun will still rise.
And there's a guy called Jack in the Green who is trying to stop it, and that's Tom Cruise.
That's Tom Cruise. He doesn't do that much to stop it, though. I'd say he's secondary to Princess Lily, who resists the temptation of darkness.
It's true. But he does set up the mirror setup to bring light into Darkness's chamber, which is kind of a Mission Impossible type.
It's true.
Scheme.
And one very...
It's the most Mission Impossible of Tom Cruise's other movies.
An important aspect of this film is that Ridley Scott directed it, which means there's only one way to defeat the bad guy. Because for whatever reason, Princess Lily and Darkness have a fight in an airlock at the end, and it ends with Princess Lily kicking Darkness into space. Exactly like Alien 1 and 2.
Why do I not remember this?
I was passing out for a lot of Legend. I kept waking up to the sounds of my friends going, I would fall for the temptations of darkness. nobody could quite resist Tim Curry as Lord Darkness in this movie. Okay, and then it gets really real. straight from Legend into perhaps his most iconic role of all time.
It's true.
Question mark?
Up there. Well, it's the one where we're joking.
The movie defined what cool was, I think. I think we are actually still living in like the wake of cool being made by this movie.
In the world that Top Gun... Here's my point. Is Top Gun, obviously U.S. military propaganda, funded by the U.S. military. Awesome. And I kind of wish that the U.S. government made bangers like that still, instead of like the current U.S. military.
What do they still fund? Because you can look at what movies they're funding.
You can. There's a list. Like stuff like Captain Marvel and stuff is like all U.S. military.
I always thought that was like, I don't know. I always thought people were lying to me when they're like, Marvel is U.S. propaganda.
You can like look it up.
It's
like,
true.
Yes, because Marvel uses like military U.S. military equipment in their movies. So like the agreement is U.S. loan set out in exchange for control over the script.
So Top Gun and Cocktail, for that matter, are both films about exactly how you should always behave in a workplace. Always hit on the hottest chick.
Yeah.
Stare at her very intensely all the time. Get real close and say stuff like, this is going to be complicated. And Tom Cruise, listen, at the beginning of this film, he walks into the bar.
Yes, I was just about to say this one.
He walks into the bar. It's full of beautiful women. Him and his, you know, goonies from the from the Top Gun program. And he goes, this is what we call a target-rich environment.
Awesome line. Don't say that to people.
It feels like something I would love to start saying, but it will always go poorly.
It will put people off of me. People will think that I'm weird.
People will think you're weird.
Yeah, I'm really worried that people might think me, the guy who's watched 22 Tom Cruise movies, it might be weird. I want to talk about Tom Cruise's... Well, where are we at in the list here?
We're at The Color of Money.
We could talk about The Color of Money. I want to get into a little Tom Cruise... the elephant in the room. Scientology.
Keep talking.
We can discuss The Color of Money first, because it's very similar to Cocktails. So we can get two birds, one stone.
They're the same film.
Which is... They're very similar movies. Like, Tom Cruise has an ability and, like, a cynical... older man takes him under his wing. Tom Cruise is working at some place called Child World in The Color of Money, but he's like also like a pool prodigy, and they're but it's not pool, it's something else called Nine Ball.
Yeah, they're playing, it's like a fake game. I understand that people probably play that.
I've never heard of Nine Ball.
Nine Ball. They go on a Nine Ball tour.
They go on a Nine Ball tour to hustle and to make money in like Atlantic City, which, you know, a depressing place. 40% poverty rate. But, you know, back in the day it was popping. Apparently for Nine Ball players in particular. He becomes the greatest Nine Ball player in the world.
And then it becomes a movie about Paul Newman hustling him, and you realize you don't care even a little bit.
Yeah, he drops out of the movie like halfway through.
And yeah, it's just about Paul Newman having like a midlife crisis.
Yeah, and I realize that this is because it's a sequel to a movie where Paul Newman was the lead from like the 60s, and I didn't know that before I went into it.
Listen.
I want to talk about
Hold on. I have to run an ad break.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Hey, radio listeners. Have you ever wondered what your favorite characters would listen to? Better yet, imagined a soundtrack for your favorite movie or book? If the answer is yes, then tune into Something for the Mood every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm your host Zoe, and I invite you to explore a new topic with me through music both new and old, but always funky, each week. To quote the wise words of iconic duo Chibo Motto, you got to know your chicken. And if you do, you'll tune into Something for the Mood every week. See you all there.
You know, on the subject of that last show promo, Something for the Mood, which, by the way, great show. One of the greats at CJLO here. It is unknown what Tom Cruise listens to. I was trying to look into that. I did some very, very, low effort research on it. And it seems like he might actually just listen to music from his films.
I don't think he listens to music. I can't really see it. I just see him, staring off. I just see, complete silence and intensity.
Yeah. Do you think he's even capable of hearing music?
I think he's... Yeah. I think it's that scene in Oppenheimer. Hear the music, referring to the physics, and I think that's how he is with acting.
I don't think I've seen Oppenheimer.
You don't think you've seen Oppenheimer?
In fact, I haven't. Okay. That's about caught up to where we are in our journey. But yeah, we're just under halfway through our PhD in Tom Cruise studies, which will be added to the Concordia campus at Loyola.
I heard about this.
Yeah.
Graham Carr will personally be cutting the ribbon.
Graham Carr will be personally cutting the ribbon at Tom Cruise Studies. We'll be teaching it.
Getting a new building, too.
But Tom Cruise Studies isn't just about the films.
It's about the man.
It's also about analyzing his beautiful mind.
So we've seen a bunch of the pre and post Scientology period, and I will
say... The cutoff is Top Gun, right?
Yes.
Do we know this for sure?
I believe so. There's people who say it's 1986 is when he joined. And you know what? I'll say this. I think Scientology might make him a better actor. Because
the stunts got better for sure.
The post Scientology movies are so much better that it's actually incredible.
Well, what have we seen since Top Gun then? It hasn't been that much better. Color of Money was kind of bad.
Okay,
Cocktail was one of the worst movies.
But also
I've ever
consider
seen.
That all of the Mission Impossibles are after the Scientology.
And also, I think we're actually on the cusp of, the good era of Tom Cruise here.
Yeah.
I mean, Rain Man was fine. I see why it's famous.
Here's my thing about the Scientology is people think that he's a complete nut job with it, and I'm there's some religious beliefs out there that are not too much crazier than Scientology.
I mean the whole Boeing thing people throw in.
The Boeing? Yes.
Isn't part of Scientology lore? Yeah, nuked Earth with Boeings.
He did not nuke Earth with Boeings, I believe, but it's how the souls were transported to the Earth as a prison, if I'm not mistaken.
The Thetans.
Yeah, the Thetans. Apparently, when he learned about that, he was taken aback and had to take a step back from Scientology, is what I read.
Yeah, people will theorize on...
He's always been just about to leave Scientology, according to the media, and I'm I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to be the next head of it after David Miscavige.
Well, people theorize that they have dirt on him.
I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either. Here's as someone
I think
who's,
he actually just likes Scientology.
Who's studying his mind, really learning to get into the headspace of Tom Cruise. I think he had a rough childhood. I think he had it hard in the Glebe.
He said his father was the type of guy who would lure you in and then beat you with.
That's awful.
Yeah, it's really terrible.
We ought to have more empathy for Tom Cruise.
People don't have empathy for him.
They don't, because he's a big movie star.
Because he's in Scientology, people think it's okay to say whatever you want about him.
But listen, he had a rough childhood. The first people to introduce him to any sort of therapy was the Church of Scientology, which was introduced to him by his wife that he married too young.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got divorced, and he stayed in Scientology, and I think Mimi Rogers didn't, as far as I remember.
It's true. A lot of people don't know this, but L. Ron Hubbard's Dianetics, he originally sought approval from the American Psychiatric Association for it, which now Scientology is very anti-psychiatry, which we can also talk about Tom Cruise's opinions on, but...
Yeah, he thinks psychiatry is voodoo magic.
You're glib. You don't even know what Adderall is.
He's talking about... Yeah, there's that speech... It's kind of the speech people point to when they're like, this guy's a nut job, right? It's him doing the Scientology speech where he's like, they're giving you band-aids for things that you can cure yourself.
That's sometimes true.
I'm sure it's sometimes true, yeah.
I don't know if it's always. I have pretty ambivalent opinions on psychiatry, but like...
As a psych major.
As a graduated psych major. However, I will say that his comments on, like, drugs, like, women who have postpartum depression taking pills, I was like, man, I don't know if this is your place.
Yeah, that speech is really bad. I'm kind of pro him jumping on the couch on Oprah.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a good one. The Letterman interview.
Oh, we can talk about this.
The Letterman interview, when he was training to be a pilot for Top Gun, which I also read that he originally said no to Top Gun multiple times, and then somebody like flew him in a plane, and he was like, I'll do it. So when he was training to be a pilot, they're flying over a mountain pass, and the altitude they have to go to, they don't quite have enough oxygen for. And Tom Cruise, instead of saying, okay, then we won't do it, he turns the oxygen off for the guy sitting, for his co-pilot? Was his co-pilot?
It was a random guy sitting in the back. He just shuts his oxygen off.
And he's on Letterman explaining this.
And he cannot contain himself.
And this guy who's like whole deal is keeping his cool. It's Tom Cruise.
Coughlin's Law.
Keep, never show surprise, keep your cool. He starts laughing so hard on Letterman that he's like heeled over his knees, wheezing, saying, he slept through the whole ride.
He woke up and he's like, my fingers are tingling.
And Letterman's just kind of like, man, I don't know, that sounds kind of dangerous. And Tom Cruise, this story of turning a guy's oxygen off and him passing out in the passenger while they're doing a plane pass is like the funniest thing in the world to him.
As a psych major also, I know that shutting someone's oxygen off, really bad for the brain. Actually quite terrible for you. And this is also the heat in my breath.
That will be the best joke I make today.
This is also the interview that, as many know,
my friend away.
That Patrick Bateman is based off of, which
it's true
that Christian Bale based his performance of Patrick Bateman off of the smile with nothing behind it of Tom Cruise on the Letterman interview. And many people also don't know this, but in the book, Patrick Bateman and Tom Cruise meet.
And they share an apartment building.
And it's the only time in the book where Patrick Bateman, aside from when, who's the one guy? The one guy, like, tries to make, like, a move on him in the bathroom, and he gets so flustered that he washes his hands.
Oh, yeah.
With his leather gloves on.
Yeah.
The only other time where he shows weakness is when he is confronted with Tom Cruise. And he's like, oh, I loved you in Bartender. And Tom Cruise is like, it's Cocktail. Cocktail is the name of the movie. And then he immediately gets a nosebleed.
It was called Cocktail. I mean, Cocktail is sort of American Psycho guide on how to be like that.
Yeah. Well, because Tom Cruise in that movie
I'm certain that Trump has seen the movie. Because, okay, Top Gun is in the zeitgeist again right now, or maybe a week ago, because of that AI video that Trump posted, right?
I'm not aware of this.
Trump, the No Kings protest AI poop video.
Oh, yeah, I am aware of this.
Trump posted an AI video of him dumping feces on the No Kings protest.
Yeah.
And Danger Zone is playing in it.
Yeah.
The video is he was cruise posting.
I did not know that Danger Zone was playing in it.
And it enlightened one of my friends. Yeah, right?
That's pretty fire.
One of my dear friends asked me the question, do you think Donald Trump has seen more Tom Cruise movies than you? And I think the answer is yes.
I
think he's seen most of these.
I could believe it. However, as his son has revealed, when he watches a movie, he just fast forwards the parts that are not action. So I think in terms of absolute hours, we have seen more.
We've seen more of Tom Cruise's face.
Yeah.
But what about like rewatches? I think
true.
That guy's seen
he is a lot older.
Top Gun at least 5 times. I would be willing to put money on Trump having seen Top Gun more than 5 times.
It's true. He's significantly older, which means more time to watch Tom Cruise movies. Which, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about time and age, is that you have more time to watch Tom Cruise.
All right, would you like to talk about the middle tooth?
Yeah, I would. This is a lesser-known Tom Cruise fact. You know how most people have... How many front teeth do most people have?
Count your 2 front teeth right now.
Yeah.
You'll have 2 of them.
If you had to guess how many front teeth does a normal person have, and then guess how many teeth Tom Cruise has as his front tooth?
He has a middle tooth.
He has a middle...
But he gained it at some point. If you look at his smile and, like...
He got some, like, orthodontist work or something, and they replaced his 2 front teeth with 1 front tooth.
If you look at him in Mission Impossible 1, he's got 2 front teeth, and by Mission Impossible 8, 1 middle tooth.
It's pretty cool. I remember I was at, like, a friend's house, and he was like, you know, how many toes does the average guy have, and how many toes do you think, you know, my buddy Scott has? And I'm like, I don't know, does he have, like, 9? And the answer was yes, because 2 of his toes were fused together. And...
You think that happened with Tom Cruise?
I think, well, it's a similar kind of set of circumstances, where... He has, like, some kind of orthodontist work, because he has a very distinct smile. He always has this, like, big plastered smile on his face.
Would you describe it as nothing behind it?
Yeah, not really. It depends on the movie.
Yeah, like, because we haven't seen him in, like, an actually romantic setting yet. Jerry Maguire is a rom-com, right? I haven't seen it.
I don't know Jerry
romantic
Maguire.
Comedy, sports drama. It's got so many... It's a movie with quotes. I know Jerry Maguire's the movie where he says, show me the money.
Ooh.
And it's also the movie where he says, you had me at hello.
I can't wait. Well, the most emotion I've really seen him show was Rain Man.
What's the most emotion you felt watching Tom Cruise films so far?
The most emotion I felt watching Tom Cruise? I guess Rain Man also. I mean, it's the only one that's, like, meant to be, like, touching.
Yeah, I'd say the end of Rain Man.
Yeah, like, it's the only one that actually, like, is meant to be, like, moving. Like, all the others, it's just, like, it's Tom Cruise up to something.
There were no stakes in Top Gun, even though there's a death in that film.
Yes.
And there's, like, people blowing each other up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. The only, like, the stakes are whether he gets to sleep with his instructor.
Or not,
and he does. That's a little...
People spoiler. Talk about it as a gay film.
I don't see it that way.
No. Things have changed since Top Gun came out.
Well, this is another controversy that we can get into in the last 3 minutes, but the Tom Cruise gay controversy.
Let's talk about it.
Tom Cruise was accused... I believe it was an interview with the Daily Mail... where a man, I think maybe a male prostitute, accused Tom Cruise of sleeping with him, or said that Tom Cruise had, like, paid for his services or something like that. And Tom Cruise successfully sued the Daily Mail for libel and gained, like, an assurance from the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail, that he was a heterosexual. He had, like, them, like, they had to declare it in, like, court that Tom Cruise was indeed a heterosexual man, which I don't really see him as, like, a sexual man, despite, like,
despite how he was portrayed for 20 years of his career.
Yeah, despite, like, all the movies, like, I just can't really believe that he actually, like, wants someone.
Well, that does it for the Tom Cruise special. Please donate to CJLO. If you enjoyed this today or my show in general, donate under the support of DJs, support Simon / Weirdo Rippers. Please donate. That would mean a lot to me. Thank you for tuning in. This will never happen again. People are going to ask you where you were during the Tom Cruise special.
This is Josh Martinez.